Now down around home, we used to hear some of the screech owls, the smaller owls, and if you're sleeping soundly and happen to wake up, they could just about scare you to death.
Ow!
Okay, I'll wind up here with a little story. I like stories dealing with animals, and I'll try to share with you one I heard a while back. It's about a frog and some ants. There was a frog who lived on a place called Round Pond, and the frog had never been too far away from Round Pond, so one day he decided that he wanted to go and see some of the world around him. So he started off in the pond. He hopped and he jumped and he looked and he hopped and he jumped and he looked. And he went on for several hours. And finally he looked up at the sun and decided, well, it's about noontime. If I turn around right now, I can get back home before dark. So the frog turned around and he hopped and he jumped and he looked and he hopped and he jumped and he looked. And all of a sudden, he decided, well, I'm lost. So he got aggravated and tired and hungry, and he stopped in the middle of the trail, and all of a sudden, these ants just started going over him and around him, and he just sat there, and the ants just kept going over him and around him, and finally, they just started biting him all over. And he jumped up, and my goodness, didn't you ants should be ashamed of yourself for biting me like that. I'm tired and hungry and lost and don't know where I'm at. So that's a heck of a way to treat a frog. So I haven't done anything to you all. So the ant said, well, we're really sorry. That's a bad thing for us to do. So I tell you, why don't you come with us to the anthill and we'll throw you a big party. So the frog said, well, that sounds like a fine idea to me. So they showed him the way to the anthill and he hopped off with them, and the ants led him on the way, and he went up to the anthill, and the queen gave orders to set up for a big party. So they were all gathered, and they were feasting, and the frog ate and drank and laughed and ate and drank and laughed until he just fell asleep. He was exhausted. The next day he woke up, and he decided, well, I want to go home. I'm ready to leave. So he looked, and he saw this ant over here, and he says, come here, ant. So would you climb that tree over there and see if you can see Round Pond for me? So the ant said, okay. So the ant climbed a tree and looked and came back down and said, yes, the pond is just over this way, just a short distance. And the frog said, would you take me to the pond? If you do, I'll give you a party. And he looked and he said, you should be ashamed of yourself, frog. Said, I'm not going to do that. Said, I'm an ant. And we do everything together. How selfish of you for asking me to go out and do that all alone, where you know ants do everything together. So the frog said, well, you tell the queen and all the ants and come on to the pond, and I'll give you all a party. So the ants all marched off together, and the queen leading the parade, and they all went to the round pond, and the frog jumped in the pond. Before he jumped in, he said, you all stay right here. I'm going to make arrangements for the party, and you wait here to hear from me. So the frog jumped in the water and disappeared. The ants stayed there all day. They didn't see or hear the frog. Well, they were there another day. No frog. So on the third day, the queen said, you know, this is kind of ridiculous. We're standing around here just starving to death waiting on some silly frog. So she tightened up her belt around her empty belly and marched off toward home. And all the other ants stood up and tightened their belts around their empty bellies, and they too followed the queen home. And to this day, ants are still walking around with their belts tightly belted around their empty middles, and they're still hungry. I got a tall tale I want to tell you. Many years ago, my father was handed down this muzzle-loading double-barrel rifle by his father, and it had been in the family for years and years. And I wanted to go hunting one day and use this rifle. And it was pretty special because the ramrod had all these fancy carvings in it, and the gun itself was really old. And I told him I'd be really careful, and I'd take care of it and really look out for it. So he agreed and let me go. So I head off down toward the river, and I looked for a place to cross the river. There was this little island over there I wanted to get to hunt on. So I got down to the water, sat down and put my waders on, and got to the other side. It was a little bit deep because I got a little wet, but it didn't take long to dry out. So I looked around for a nice spot, and I did find a nice place in the moss-covered trees there and sat on a log. And I sat there all day, and I looked and listened, and I didn't see or hear a thing. So I became concerned about the load in the gun, so I poured a little more powder in there, and I took the ramrod and packed it all down good and tight. And another day passed, and I didn't see or hear a thing. So I became concerned about the load in the gun again, so I put a little more powder in there and stuffed it down in there and packed it tight with the ramrod. And I sat there and I kept doing this, and finally a week had gone by. And then I heard this commotion coming down the river on the seventh day. And I get ready. I start easing up off that log and raising the old gun to my shoulder. And the commotion got closer and closer and louder and louder. And then I heard another commotion. And I sat back down. And coming up the river, there must have been 1,000 geese. And the ducks were coming down this way, and the geese were coming this way. And boy, I'm getting excited now, so I raise up again. I'm ready for them to cross in the middle and just unload into them. Well, that's when I heard another sound. Sometime during those 6 or 7 days, this great big rattlesnake had coiled himself around my feet. And I was sitting there, and he started to buzzing, and I looked down, I sat back down and put the gun down. And I was in a predicament, friends. And I looked around, and I looked around, and there behind me stood this great big black bear grinning and growling and licking his teeth. My gracious, what am I going to do now? I looked over in the clearing toward home. One last look, and I looked, and there stood the biggest buck I've ever seen in my life. He must have had 27 points. He was a big one. I thought about those ducks, and I thought about those geese. And that rattler and that great big bear, and I wanted to get that deer. So I said, well, there's no need of holding back. I raised that old gun up to my shoulder, and I forgot about the ramrod. It was still in the barrel. So it's too late. I said, pull both triggers. Boom, let's get them off. So I just raised that thing up, blam. Well, the old gun split right half in two. One barrel went up the river killing 1,000 geese. The other barrel went up the river and killed 1,000 ducks. The trigger guard from the gun just flew off and cut the snake's head clean off. The stock of the gun went over my head and hit the bear in the head and knocked him out cold. I looked over in the clearing, and there lay the buck. Oh, I'm getting excited. I get up and get the waders on and get out across the river, get to the other side, and my waders were just plumb full of fish. I get over and I look, and there lay the deer. Boy, I said, I've never seen such a deer as this. And he laid there, and I thought, now, wait a minute, what happened to the ramrod? And I looked, and I looked, and over on the tree over here was a little scratch mark. And I went over to look at it, and then over here was another little scratch mark. So the ramrod had bounced off these trees and gone all the way deep into the swamp and stuck into the side of this big cypress tree was that ramrod holding 9 quail. Thank y'all.
Florida Folklife Program, and I wanted to tell you a little bit about the Scottish bagpipe music that's coming up next. On your program it says Irish bagpipe music, but as everyone knows, the bagpipe is famous for coming from Scotland, and we have Sandy Keith, a master of the Scottish bagpipe, is going to play for us. He lives in the town of Dunedin, which has a Scottish heritage, and they have bagpipes in the schools, as they do in some other Florida towns. Sandy's here at the festival as a part of the apprenticeship tent and program, which is the blue tent up at the top of the hill. He's been teaching the Scottish bagpipe to Bess Tannenbaum, and there's four other apprenticeships where master folk artists are teaching their crafts to a younger person, so it's passed on over the generations. Sandy's particular bagpipe style is a solo style. He also leads whole bands of bagpipers, but he is famous for playing a solo style with an old Gaelic name of pibroch, and that is, it's a variation form where he plays a tune, and then he's going to do six or seven or eight variations upon that tune, which have more and more ornamentation, which you'll hear after you hear it for a while. I think that we should have Sandy come out now and demonstrate his bagpipe for us. Please make welcome Sandy Keith.
Thank you. take a minute before I play again and just indicate to, you know, it said on the program Irish bagpipe, and it isn't too far-fetched. The instrument itself is known as the Great Highland Bagpipe. It comes from Scotland. But if you took the parts of the bagpipes, and they all have their own special names, the part of my hand is a chanter. The wood and the ivory comes from Africa. The part of the rest of the bagpipe, the black stalks, are all African blackwood and come from Africa. The bag underneath the velvet cover is elk hide, comes from Canada. The velvet itself comes from North Carolina. The reeds in the chanter and the drone come from Spain. The cords that hold the bag, the stalks together, come from Ireland. The hemp that's wrapped around each joint to keep the thing tight also comes from Ireland. So you can see, although it's a Great Highland bagpipe and is played and made in Scotland, nothing, no part of the bagpipe actually is grown or comes from Scotland. It comes from other parts of the country. The last particular thing I played was the so-called classical music of the bagpipe. Some of that music was written as far back as the 1600s. The first two or three tunes I played was known as light music. It's played by the British Army. That music comes from around the 1800s. And the last selection I'll play is probably more known as part Irish, part Scottish, which was relatively new around the beginning of the 19th century.
That was Sandy Keith from Dunedin with the Scottish bagpipe music. He is a master artist in our apprenticeship program, which, as I mentioned before, we have an apprenticeship tent up the hill, the blue tent, and there's five master folk artists who are teaching their crafts to younger people, passing on the traditions. We have another such master folk artist next, Spiros Skordilis, plays Greek bouzouki, which is a guitar-like instrument. And Tarpon Springs is a community with a lot of Greek people, and he is one of the finest bouzouki players in the state. And he has been teaching two young men to play the bouzouki. He's going to come out and play a little by himself, and then one of his apprentices is going to come out and join him, and we can see how well the student has learned his tradition. The bouzouki has four strings, and Spiro will play dance music. If we had any Greek dancers, they might jump up and start dancing. But he's going to play some improvisations that are maybe a little bit like jazz. He plays what comes to him, and then he plays tunes. So a lot of it has to do with whatever spirit takes him when he's playing. Okay, let's welcome Spiro Skordilis from Tarpon Springs.